We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome to this episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And welcome to the new year, our first episode of 2021.
Yes, welcome. Hopefully so far it's been better than 2020 was.
Only a couple
much worse,
in.
But yeah, I mean,
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah,
still a lot could happen.
That's very true. Very true.
Yeah, gotta get the final Senate results. You gotta have you're gonna have a new administration coming in. Vaccines going out. Who knows what's going on?
Oh yeah, COVID lockdowns getting a lot crazier. So.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about that. We're going to talk about some sci-fi, get away from the real world for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And enter the science fiction world.
And do our thing that we don't do so well, but we're going to do it anyways.
Yep. Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I guess let's go ahead and jump into it.
Might as well.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, then, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
All right, well, what do we got in store for this week?
Well, we're back with Star Trek Discovery. We are doing season one, episodes one through, or sorry, not one through six, four through six. So this is our part two of our Star Trek Discovery season one conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we will start off with episode four. And didn't really care for four too much.
I mean, I really didn't care for any of them. I mean, they weren't bad. I mean, it's just...
Some of them, out of the three we watched, I think four is my least favorite. But, you know, because four, just to give everyone an idea or recall what happened, Discovery is kind of... Give it a mission from Starfleet to go rescue this mining facility that is under attack by the Klingons called Korvon 2, which produces like 40% of the Federation's dilithium that they need to power their ships. So,
right. It's a critical component in the warp drive process.
Yeah.
So they can't travel without it. It's basically their form of gasoline. Sorry. Continue, Steven.
Yeah. And, you know, at the start of this episode, they are not ready to make the jump. So the episode is kind of them exploring how they can successfully make the jump. They try once and fail.
By fail, he means almost jumped right into a star.
Yes.
Which goes to show you how dangerous this thing can be.
Yeah, especially if it's kind of like driving blind. You can't do it.
It is. I'm curious how much of the science aspect of it you understood. The concept of probability and time being an important factor in the equation and why they can't only jump short distances and not longer distances.
I understood. It's been a couple days since I've seen this episode. I've kind of watched one a day over the last few days.
Oh, yeah. See, I watched them all last night. but then again, I've been busy these past couple of days, so...
No, this one's about 48 hours old in my head.
Mm.
But I did understand, you know, it's kind of like they have a map, but it's incomplete. And so they're not able to really successfully navigate the mycelial network. So Stemmons keeps calling it to successfully jump to their destinations.
Kind of, yeah. The way that I understand it, he's explaining it based off of this is... The spore network is based off of a quantum mechanics or quantum physics dealing with probability that, you know, the further away from your point that you're going, the more difficult it comes or it is to predict the location. And that's why, you know, when you plot a point farther away, it's harder to predict the probability of you actually landing in that spot. And that's why they jumped right into the star rather than Corvin 2.
Yeah, think of it as, you know, a short jump is trying to throw a dart at a dartboard and hit a bullseye from 2 feet away versus 200 feet away.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. And then they just don't have a complicated or sophisticated enough software system to be able to, as you said earlier, to successfully chart or navigate the system.
And that's one of the things that was brought up in this episode. They tried to, like, use AI or some sort of software to navigate it, and it's just been unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. So that's where Brenham gets the bright idea, and she realizes that the tardigrade is connected to the spores of the mushrooms that the Discovery houses. And
now, I will admit, I do love their explanation of why the tardigrade makes sense into this, because they... I don't remember the name of it, but it's supposed to be a macro version of a microscopic organism. We actually see it in Ant-Man, believe it or not. Those little things that try to
eat them. It's a tardigrade.
Yeah, it's a... Well, no, I thought this was supposed to be like a similar species, similar name, but...
Well, they call it a Reaper.
Oh, okay. Reaper. But it's essentially a tardigrade.
Yeah, we have tardigrades, which are microscopic organisms, which it... closely resembles physically.
Mm-hmm.
It's hundreds and thousands of times larger.
Which, I don't know if you heard about this, but tardigrade, it's a little unrelated, but apparently, I think it was a Japanese vessel carrying tardigrades accidentally.
Israeli.
Oh, is it Israeli? Yeah,
Israeli.
Yeah, it spilled up over on the moon, so now there's tardigrades supposedly on the moon.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
And they're very tough creatures, which can survive nearly any kind of inhospitable environment, which makes sense of why the captain, God damn it, I can't remember his name.
Lorca,
thank you. Captain Lorca wants to try and weaponize it. I mean, it tore through tritanium holes. I mean, it ripped through Klingons like it was nothing. So they're thinking like the hide or the claws or something. Let's try and weaponize it.
And it's one of those, you know, Brenham becomes aware that it did all that in self-defense. And when her and the first officer, or not the first officer, the security officer tries to kind of sedate it, you know, the tardigrade attacks and kills her.
Right. Well, I mean, that's our own fault for thinking that, one, assuming that the other ship wouldn't have thought about that and tried to sedate it first.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that, oh, I'll just sedate it. I'm smarter than an entire ship full of extremely intelligent people who probably already tried this shit.
Yeah.
You know, and then she shot phasers at it before. What the hell did she think that phaser rifle was going to do to stop it?
Well, I don't know. It was one of those, if she was a guy, she would have just... No, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, it's probably the right call, brother. But, I mean, it was just a dumb move on her part.
She just didn't put much thought with it. She let her... cockiness get the better of her.
Yeah, her arrogance. I mean, or was it just fear? Fear of the captain? Or letting down the captain?
Probably that too.
Because, I mean, there does seem to be a lot of fear of the captain.
Yeah, a little bit. I won't say fear, but intimidation.
Well, it seems, intimidation, but a little bit more than usual that you see on a Starfleet vessel.
Yeah, which we'll touch on more, because after these three episodes, you learn a lot about them. So, towards the end of the show, we can have more of a conversation about how his character develops and more about Captain Lorca.
Yeah. But, I mean, I did like the explanation of the tardigrade. That was actually one of the things I did like, to explain why the tardigrade, how it can navigate the network, because its macro or its micro version is a microscopic organism that lives or is around this kind of size, and it feeds off of these spores, which is also at the same level, which is spread throughout the galaxy, so they have access to that network. And since this is just basically a macro version, it can explain why it can navigate the network so well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just really like that. It was a good explanation. I'll give them credit where credit's deserved.
Okay. And then the other side of this, there's two storylines. We follow the Discovery, and then we follow the B storyline, which is the Klingons, where we see Volk, the torchbearer, find out his ship has kind of been dead in space since the Battle of the Binary Stars, and, you know, his crew's starving, they're running out of their food supplies, and then another captain swoops in and kind of feeds them, and Volk, the Torchbearer loses his loyalty, or his men's loyalty, and they join the other guy and kind of banish this Volk onto the Shenzo to essentially die amongst the enemy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a way to go.
One of the things I picked up early in this episode is when Volk and the lady, I can't think of the lady Klingon's name, but we find out they ate Captain Georgiou.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, actually.
The first time we watched this, when the show first premiered, I didn't notice this, and I don't know, like, I was reading the subtitles, jotting down a note, and I looked back up, and they said something about eating the captain, and I was like, wait, and I rewound it and watched that scene again. And yeah, they totally ate Captain Georgiou.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's not cannibalism if it's not your own species.
True, but still, I mean, another sentient species. I didn't think the Klingons were, you know,
I mean, if they're desperate enough. Yeah, but I mean, they don't like eating dead things, so that's why it's a little bit surprising. But, you know, desperate times do call for desperate measures. I mean,
it sounds like, I don't think you would just store the captain. So I imagine she was one of the first things she ate, or they ate.
Probably.
And it's just, like you said, it's weird that they would even consider eating a dead thing and then eating a dead enemy. That just seems even weirder. I can't think of an instance where
the dead enemy actually doesn't make sense. Like, remember, the Klingons are very famous for ripping out the heart of your enemy and eating or feasting on it in front of them before they die, you know, kind of thing. That
is just like one thing. But, you know, one way that she described it was, you know, that Volk enjoyed peeling the meat off of her skull.
I don't remember that. It's too much reading. That's what, you know, even when me and Dad were both watching, it's like, God damn, there's just so much reading. I hate having to go whole scenes of reading this shit. And, like, I get it. They're just Klingons. They're talking amongst themselves. Why would they need to speak English? Well, I mean, it's just a TV show. We don't want to spend half the TV show reading when we should just be watching it. If I wanted to read, I would read a book.
You know? Well, it's one of those things where, yeah, there's fans like you who don't want to read, and then there's fans out there who don't mind subtitles.
Yeah, but not when it's like a third of the episode.
And they want to hear, you know, the Klingon being spoken. Yeah, no, I mean, not everyone's going to love reading subtitles, but there's fans out there, I'm sure, who do love reading the subtitles and hearing the Klingon spoke.
No, I don't know. If they are, then they're fucking weird as hell. Sorry, but I mean, that's...
I mean, there's people who watch foreign films, and that's entirely in subtitles, so there's audiences out there for it.
Okay, it's got to be... Okay, the subtitle, the audience for the subtitles would be... Yeah, but you can do the subtitles for any language. This is just, you know, it seems unnecessarily done for the subtitles.
It's just, like I said, it's
one of those things where it's like, it's got to be like a give and take. I would like to see a bit more action with the Klingons, given that it's Klingons, you know, see more hand-to-hand combat fighting, more fighting with the warships, less, you know, everybody's just talking. You know, it's not very Klingon-like to just show them sitting around talking to each other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
You know, like, if you had Klingon warriors battling, you know, fist hand-to-hand combat with, you know, Federation officers, and then you have like one with the batleth rip, you know, cutting their hearts open and then them ripping it out and eating it, like actual Klingon shit, like shit Klingon would do, but they wouldn't touch in, you know, the previous shows. Okay, then I could get the subtitles. But it's got to be a give and a take. You know, if you want me to sit down and read watch a third of this episode reading it, you know, give me some good shit to deal with, you know.
Well, yeah, that's understandable. I mean, if the episodes were fantastic, then you might be more willing to sit and listen or read this.
Right.
But
where they're not, and they're made even worse by me having to read it.
Well, that's just one fan's opinion. Like I said, I'm sure there's fans on your side, and I'm sure there's fans against you. Episode 4 for me was just, we got a lot of information, and We finally see the Discovery make a jump, come in and save this mining facility.
They finally solve the jumping problem.
Yeah. And, you know, using the tardigrade to do that, and they were able to swoop in and save the facility from several Klingon warbirds or fighters or whatever they were. They looked pretty small to be warbirds, so.
Yeah, I think they were just squadron fighters or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember vessels. What they're called.
So, but other than that, there was.
I mean,
oh, four the was epi- in... hold on.
Sorry.
No, I'm thinking of five. I'm trying not to get the episodes mixed up.
Well, I mean, we're pretty much done with four. Let's go to five.
Yeah, we can talk about five. Five is a little more interesting of an episode because this is it starts out with Lorca kind of at a very important meeting with superior officers where mm-hmm. he debriefs them on some of the successful missions they've had since they've been able to jump more often.
A little bit too successful if you ask some of these admirals.
Yeah, and, you know, they're catching wind that the Klingons might be on to what's going on. And they kind of ask him to dial it back a little bit.
Right, I mean, they don't want to lose their only asset before they can figure out how to make more. I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, that's basically what they said was, you're...
Well, they also said, they also said in the scene that they ramped up production on the spore drives, so that way they could retrofit new ships or existing ships with this technology so that they have more than just the Discovery who's able to jump in, make an attack, and jump out and be hundreds of light years away.
Right, but the problem was the tardigrade. They haven't been able to solve the navigation problem, and the tardigrade is the best way to do it.
The Admiralty wants more, but, not exactly easy to come by. So there's a problem. So they can get the specs and build the spore drives, but you still have a navigation issue with you're not able to jump without a tardigrade.
Right, and then the worst part becomes apparently every time the tardigrade, the spore drive is used on the tardigrade, it's been weakening the tardigrade to the point to where it cannot continue to sustain the jumps. So they have to try and find an alternative source for the navigation, but the problem is it's got to share... I think how they explained it was they got part of the tardigrade's DNA to be able mm-hmm. to resequence it to match with the spores,
mm-hmm.
but spores are hundreds of million years old in our evolution, so in the divergence of our evolution. So for a lot of different species, or hundreds of different species, they are not compatible enough to share the DNA, but because...
They're magically suitable for Homo sapiens.
Yes. I mean, our love for shrooms came in handy. So, yes. But the problem becomes you cannot genetically alter human beings. It's against the law because of the eugenics wars. Mm-hmm. So it's a big no-no to use that on humans. So they had to find an alternative species capable of doing it. And then the worst part of it is that it has to be a sentient species because to be able to successfully navigate the network. You can't just get a rat or something. It's got to be an intelligent species.
Yeah, then Stebbins injects himself to kind of make him his own guinea pig.
Well, I mean, he did it for a good cause because, when they jumped in to go and save the captain, the tardigrade went into deep survival mode, getting rid of all of its, liquids that...
Pretty much went into a cocoon.
Yeah, a form of dehydrated cocoon where it shriveled up into a ball. And what's his name? Saruk, who was then acting captain, wanted to rehydrate it and use it regardless, which probably would have killed it, to navigate out once they got the captain. But what's the lieutenant's name?
Lieutenant Stemmons. I don't know the doctor's name, which is weird. Stemmons. Usually I do.
It's just a lot of names. I'm surprised I'm doing this well. So Stemmons.
You're not doing well at all.
Hey, I'm sort of getting into names. I'm getting close. So Simmons, he decides to be the guinea pig and inject himself because you kind of knew this was coming too, because he was even talking about how he was jealous that, this thing could see the network, the spore network, and he always wanted to see it.
Yeah.
So he injects himself and he gets in and he gets stabbed. And ironically, when he comes to, he just starts laughing.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of like a Joker-esque feel.
No, it was almost Picard-like, you know, when Picard got stabbed through the heart and he looks down and he just starts laughing at the, you know, Nausicaan stabbed him.
But I felt like it was more Joker-ish. Creepy, coming out of unconsciousness, just laughing.
I was thinking of near death. Oh my god, that's, you know, laughing at death kind of experience. But, or it could just be he was high on the shrooms.
Could be.
I mean, you do see, I don't know if it was this one or the next one, but you do see a noticeable change in the Lieutenant Dickhead from before getting injected with the shrooms and after getting injected with the shrooms.
Yeah, you do.
And I mean, it was kind of funny, too. I even pointed that out to Dad. I was like, see, first five episodes is what you like before you start smoking weed. And six is what happens after you start smoking weed. You go dickhead and you go chill. You know what I mean? I thought that was like, I mean, that was a perfect example. Oh, that should be turned into a meme. Only if we could.
Well, we're missing the big, big storyline in this fifth episode, which is Captain Lorca ends up getting captured by Klingons and being in prison with a one Harry Mudd.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. I can't remember the name of the actor who played him. Do you know? Because he's
Rian,
a prominent.
Rian Johnson or something like that.
I mean, yeah, he's a notable actor. I mean, he's been in a lot of other.
Rainn Wilson.
Yeah.
He's most notably plays Dwight in The Office.
Yeah, very good actor. And I think he played Harry Mudd pretty damn well. It's supposed to be a slightly younger, a little bit skinnier version, but you can kind of see the gut starting to get there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that, you know, you got him in the notes of description of Mudd. I'm pretty impressed that you remember who Harry Mudd was.
I'm no slouch.
Okay. Right.
I do my research. I know my stuff, kind of.
It's kind of interesting, though, because the throwback to the OG series, you know, you could tell that they tried to do it to appease some OG fans in the older Star Trek audience.
Well, it's like you're bringing them in to appeal to that, and then you're also... There's a part in the episode where when Saru kind of finds out he's acting captain and he's talking to the computer and he asks for a list of most notable captains in Starfleet history. And it pulls up Jonathan Archer from the Enterprise series and Christopher Pike. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was a little bit of Easter eggs and nostalgia feel in this episode with some of those little things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree 100%, especially with the, what was the name of the ship? The Georgia ship before it went down? And
Shinzo.
The Shinzo. That actually, the design looked very similar to the NX style ship from Enterprise.
Yeah, I did a little bit.
So, I mean, I like how they're doing the evolution from the old school ships to the newer. You throw in Jonathan Archer, Pike. I'd like to do, I mean, they are, aren't they? They're doing... a spinoff series on Pike, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. So
with Spock.
Are they going to do it based off of where it picked off in the show, or are they just going to do like a... Yeah, I guess it would make sense to do where it left off on the show. I'd like to get a little bit more background on Pike, why he would be considered one of the greats.
Yeah. And we'll probably see. Mm-hmm. Season 2, you know he's in Season 2, so we'll get there more when we get to Season 2.
And then maybe, did you remember the rest of the names? Because those weren't the only two names that they listed. They listed Captain Georgiou.
Yeah, those are the three I noticed. I didn't recognize the other two names.
See, that might be an important thing to keep an eye on. Because that could be an Easter egg on another show that they could potentially do. I mean, not that they're actually going to do it, but, you know, maybe they bring him in later.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe he pops up like, somewhere on a new show or something.
Just yeah, as
a guest.
Or they pop up in the episode, or they bring it up again. So it just might be something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, for sure.
So
for sure. Well, while Lorca is prisoner on this Klingon ship, you do find out a little bit about his past. You know that he was on the USS Baron when the war started, and then they came under attack and actually lost all hands with the exception of the captain. He was the only survivor to come out of his ship. Surprisingly, which is odd because most captains will try to save everyone but themselves.
Right. I mean, it's considered an honorable means of dying if you're a captain to go down with your ship and save your crew. But I guess, I mean, it's literally the exact opposite if you're the only one who survives and you're the captain. It's a great disgrace. Lose all hands and your ship, and you're the only one who survived. It seems very cowardice to most.
Yeah, and a lot of people kind of throw shade at him, and I think that's part of why, as you mentioned, they feared him or intimidated by him. I mean, his whole crew was lost, but he survived, and now he's commanding the most advanced ship in Starfleet. So that would raise some questions if they're ever in the same situation. Would Lorca sell out his crew just to save himself?
I know. I mean, it's... I mean, he doesn't seem like it, because based off of...
No, he doesn't seem like it, but it seems like that would kind of be lingering thoughts of the crew, especially if they know his history and knew what happened to him.
Right. Well, I mean...
I would be.
His explanation was he sacrificed his ship to prevent the Klingons from capturing them and holding him as prisoner. And but then again, how would he have escaped?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what, did he destroy the ship and leave? So, I mean, it's a clear inconsistency with the storyline, and I think it's something that's going to be, well, we know it's going to be addressed later.
It gets addressed.
But it is an Easter egg. Sure. It's something to notice, a discrepancy. So,
yeah, because there's more discrepancies.
Well, it's not just
six. Well, it's not really discrepancies, but in episode 6, the Admiral... Yeah, is very, you know, she mentions it several times that he has changed a lot over the last couple months since the war has started. He is not the same man that she knew before the war.
Right. Well, she basically says that he hasn't been the same since that battle. And I think what she thinks is that the losing the ship and losing everything is just fucked them up psychologically. And he's just faking everything just so he can get revenge. And I think that's probably what she was thinking, that he's just becoming consumed with hatred over the Klingons, and that's why he always wants to be in battle. He always wants to be in the front. He, you know, is willing to put himself out there and be at risk more than, you know, we kind of need him to. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But the episode 5 ends, because we'll just mention this and then scoot on over to episode 6. So ends with Lorca meeting Tyler and escaping. And then the Discovery is kind of tailing the ship that they were being held on. So the Discovery is able to beam them out and then jump to a new location using Lieutenant Stamens. Mm-hmm. And that lets Tilly and Brenham take the tardigrade and kind of just let it go. And it warps off into its own, wherever it decided to go, its own neck of the woods.
Yep.
And that's how that episode ended. So that was an interesting way to end that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a significantly better episode than we've seen so far. Still not great, but, you know, I'm kind of enjoying season 1 as each episode passes. Like, I like the next episode a little better than the previous.
I mean, it's definitely upward trending as we're continuing through the episodes. Mm-hmm. It's improving, but...
It's a slow upward trend.
Right. It's very, very slow. Yeah. So it's like, this it's one's like up being, here. This one's like a fingertip or two better. So it's building.
Well, it's like being on a staircase that has 100 steps and being on step 5. It's gradually improving, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. Now the question is it going to be an exponential growth soon, or is it going to be diminishing returns over time?
Or is it going to fall flat?
Yeah, well, that's what diminishing returns means. It flattens or plateaus.
Yeah.
I love being an econ major. Sometimes it comes in handy.
We'll see. So, episode 6. Episode 6 is another weird.
Yeah, the captain boinks the admiral.
Yeah, he does boink the admiral. Well, it starts off Lorca and Tyler are kind of in this training simulation, and he makes Tyler the new chief of security once Tyler's ready after being a prisoner of war for 7 months. And then, you know, we see
Really talk about Tyler too much in the from 5, did we?
No, and we could touch on it a little more now that we're recapping the last of the episodes we're covering.
Yeah, basically when Lorca was in prison with him and God damn it, what was his name?
Harry Mudd. We just went over this.
Yes, I know. but I'm also a little stoned. So after Lorca was thrown in prison with Mud, there was another guy in there, a Lieutenant Tyler, who apparently the chick Klingon, who abandoned Volk, on the Shinjo. She didn't really, because she beamed aboard last minute. Yeah, air quote, abandoned him, but it was supposed to be a ruse to save his life. But apparently she had taken a liking to Tyler, which is why he managed to survive for so long, supposedly. And they said that he was waiting for the right soldier or partner to be able to escape properly, and they managed to... he was kind of instrumental in their escape of the Klingon warship, in which the Klingon chick actually found him, and he beat the living shit out of her for... I guess raping him so much. But
I guess.
And then I guess she got her face burned off. That was one of the things that bothered me, which was those Klingon disruptors. I mean, they had just totally incinerated anything.
Yeah, it was like watching an episode of The Mandalorian where he's disintegrating Jawas.
Yeah, just vaporizing them.
Mm-hmm.
I know Klingon disruptors are powerful, but they're not that powerful. I mean, at least get like giant holes in them or something, not complete vaporization.
No disintegrations.
Yeah. But, so, okay, yeah, now you're caught up.
Back to six. You know, Sarek is going on a mission and ends up getting into trouble because I guess whoever is joining him on his mission is a radical Vulcan and kind of wants to see Sarek dead. So he kind of blows himself up and leaves Sarek stranded in a nebula.
Now, I can... This is not from me. This is from other Star Trek fans that I have talked to about this. This is actually where they lost a lot of Star Trek fans, was this Extreme Vulcans. Because the very concept is kind of an oxymoron. Extremist Vulcans who are willing to self-sacrifice themselves in the name of racial superiority. It made no sense. It was kind of... I do know that that's where a lot of Star Trek fans got off the highway or got off this ramp when this first season of Discovery came out.
I mean, it makes sense because, I mean, this whole episode is surrounded and about Sarek and Brenham. And one of the things they've had that we've learned in, I think it was episode 2, is they have this mind-meld connection where now they can feel each other's presences. And, you know, it allows Sarek to reach out to Brenham and they can communicate without any forms of communication.
Right.
Like telepathy.
It essentially is telepathy.
Now, I know they have those powers, but I think this is the first time we're seeing anything like this.
Yes,
where they can kind of just chat in each other's consciousness.
Yeah, so. I mean, this really is. I mean, it's not the first time we've seen Sarek do something similar. We actually see, I think the closest thing would be the mind melt with Picard in The Next Generation. He's going through, I can't remember the name of the syndrome, but he's basically losing all control of his emotions. And he has to do a form of mind meld where he essentially dumps his emotions, all of his feelings, and transfers it to Picard to where now he's in control of it, to where he can stay steady through the negotiations. So I mean there's stuff to where it's not totally out of the realm of possibility, but it is new in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I think that lost me a little more than the Vulcans being, you know, having Vulcan extremists. But now that you said it makes a little more sense. But I'm just saying for me personally, that weird telepathy communication thing that they have going between Brenham and Sarek, that lost me a little more than the extremists. Because that played such a, you know, minor part to it.
Well, I mean, it was a minor part, but it's a part that I think gets bigger over the series, throughout the series. This extreme, and it's something that was also in
Enterprise,
but it's a little bit different because the extremists were more they weren't racial extremists; they were more interpretations of logic, because there's kind of like how Kahless is kind of the messiah for the Klingons. They have Vulcans have something similar. I can't remember his name though. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they follow specific teachings in an Enterprise. There was disagreement on the actual text of his teachings, different interpretations, kind of like how
it's kind of like having different forms of Christianity.
Right. There was different sects of Christianity, different interpretations of it. It's the same with the idea of logic. And you would have some who would believe that you would need emotions to complement logic. You cannot, completely separate them. You would have There was different teachings of it, and you would have extremists amongst those groups, which made a little bit more sense. But the racial, this is more racially based. This is more, they just think that humans are inferior and Vulcans are superior, and you shouldn't try to intermingle the two. They're more xenophobic, racially based than interpretation of logic. So that's where it just doesn't make as much sense for the Vulcans.
No, and it's an
oxymoron.
But like I said, in this, like I didn't see it, and I don't remember much of the next episodes coming forward. It's been a while since we've rewatched Discovery, if I've ever rewatched it. I don't know. Small part in this episode, but if it is a bigger part in future episodes, then yeah, I could see why it would lose fans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It didn't lose me. It wasn't, I didn't really care about it enough, but I know, because I would go to a lot of comic book stores at the time when it came out, and I, comic book stores tend to be more Star Trek fans. So, I was talking to some Star Trek fans, and I'm like, oh, what do you think about the show so far? And they're like, oh, yeah. I mean, it was all right until they started doing the, Vulcan extremists. Then we just kind of, and they all would say pretty much the same thing, that I didn't care about it too much, but I guess other fans, like you said earlier, some fans care, some fans don't. Everyone's a little bit different, but
yeah, everyone has their opinion. Mm-hmm. So, but more on this episode, like I said, with it being centered around Brenham and Sarek, it was a very interesting episode, because the Discovery kind of jumps to the rescue, but because Sarek's in a nebula, they can't really take the Discovery into the nebula, so they take a shuttle. So essentially, Brenham can strengthen the connection between her and Sarek to wake him up so he could activate his transponder to so they can locate him and rescue him. Now, we do get a very interesting backstory of, Sarek and Brenham and kind of their history together, where we learned Brenham graduated top of her class at the Vulcan Institute of Science and applied to be in the Vulcan Exploration or Exploratory Group.
Yeah, the Vulcan Expeditionary Group or something like that.
Yeah, where she was denied, where she thought she had failed Sarek because she wasn't good enough despite being top of her class and excelling at understanding logic and the Vulcan way of life.
Which I should point out, getting into the Vulcan Expeditionary Group is like the equivalent of getting into Harvard. It's like the best of the best, even amongst the Vulcans. So to get in is, for a human, would be an extremely impressive feat. So.
Yeah, well, she lived most of her life, the last 7 or 8 years, thinking, oh, I failed Sarek, when really the Vulcan exploratory group offered her a position. But the problem was they gave Sarek an ultimatum saying, hey, if you let in Brenham, we're not going to let Spock join this group we're not going to allow two humans into our group.
Yeah, well, it was
essentially,
I mean, he was he said it in a very dickish manner. It's like, oh, we appreciate your experiment of trying to get humans, and we could tell that you're definitely the best at doing it, but we're only going to let one human in. You can, because Spock is still a human, so you could either choose Spock or this chick to get in. And it's like, well, come on, you're giving me an impossible decision. And he's like, oh, that sounds like an emotional response. It's like, well, no shit, Sherlock. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you're basically saying, which child do you think is better?
My biological child or my adoptive child?
Right. And then the worst part is he chose the biological child and he rejected him.
Spock still went to Starfleet. He's like, fuck that.
Yeah. So not only did he choose.
Fuck you, I'm going home.
Yeah. So not only did he make the wrong or choose his son over, somebody he does consider a daughter, because I think that's something they do talk about in these visions eventually. He made the wrong pick.
Yeah, and he's felt bad about it. He's felt bad and guilty about it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that she failed him. He failed her in not sticking up for her when this ultimatum was put on him.
Right.
And he chose poorly. But as you mentioned, there's another great thing that happens in this episode, and it's the admiral banging a captain, which feels like a no-no, but you can tell there was some history there.
Oh yeah, there was lots of history. I guess she was a doctor, so.
Yeah, the admiral is a psychiatrist, psychologist. Because Lorca's talking about, you know, I didn't know you were practicing as they're communicating. And she's kind of analyzing him and how he's been over the last few months and all this fun stuff. So he's like, I didn't know you were practicing your whatever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny how she's basically chewing his ass out. And he's like, oh, calm down. Let's just grab a couple drinks. Oh, I'll bring out the single malt scotch.
Let's not talk like Starfleet officers. Let's bang like humans.
Yeah, yeah, and apparently, well, the only thing that stopped her, I think, was finding a phaser under his pillow.
No, they banged.
Was it before? Well, when did she find the phaser? Was it before or after?
She had woken up and he was asleep. They already, they nailed. They so boned.
No, good for them.
Yeah, he popped a future Viagra and nailed her.
Oh my gosh. I mean, would they even need Viagra in the future?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. These are the real questions we need to be asking.
Yeah, it's probably a shot, and, you know, it's an instant erection. You just...
Done. I mean, do you even really need the shot? I mean, the pills would seem easier. Maybe it's just... I don't know.
I'm thinking just a quick shot to the neck, because, you know, I think the pill takes like half an hour to kick in. Or a shot in the neck, you know, you're instantly...
I don't know, but do you think I think she kind of overreacted, don't you? Like, she freaked out after she found a phaser under his pillow.
I mean, he did wake up, climb on top of her, choke her a little bit, and then pointed a phaser that was not on stun.
Did he? I don't remember that part.
Yeah, it was as red as Santa Claus.
I guess I just missed that part. I don't know, but I just remember seeing her jump up out and like, really, you keep a phaser under your bed? I just assumed that she found the phaser.
No, she startled him, and he... acted like it was a threat, so he was ready to pop a cap in her head, technically.
Yeah, well, I mean, he essentially did. I mean, because she freaked out and she was like, okay, well, you're pretty much done, and he's begging, literally begging to not lose his ship. He's like, I'll do anything. I got a problem. I haven't been the same, just yada yada yada.
And because she finds out that psychologically he is, you know, broken.
Yeah.
He's not. He should not have passed the psyche vows and was able to fake it until he made it.
Mm-hmm. And she's just very perceptive, because her response was, you know, it's amazing. I can't tell if you're telling the truth or not. And then she just walks away.
Yeah.
And that's when, I think it was after that. And in the next scene, when I don't remember who told him, but Sarek wasn't going to be good enough. They found Sarek, and he wasn't going to be good enough to go.
Oh, yeah. They had an opportunity, because Sarek's mission was to meet some Klingons for potential of peace talks.
Yeah.
He was supposed to assess if the peace, you know, if they legitimately wanted to discuss peace and kind of evaluate the situation, if they could go forward with an actual peace meetings.
Yeah, because supposedly, like, two prominent houses out of the 24 were exiled from the new leader, the guy who took Vok's ship and crew and left them, you know, high and dry. He kicked them out, and they were willing to negotiate with Sarek to, you know, for a potential peace deal, but it turned out to be a trap because Sarek got hurt, and the admiral was in, you know, on board the ship. Captain Larkus suggested, oh, let's send the admiral, and it turned out to be a trap, and they captured the admiral, which I'm pretty confident he knew it was a trap.
Lorca?
Yeah.
No, because when Saru tells him, he's pretty shocked.
Is he, though? Or is he playing shocked to Saru?
No, I think he's legitimately shocked, because he sends, you know, he sends someone he just banged and have some feelings for.
Who is also about to take away his ship and ruin his life. And who's about to already kill. So why not send him to
the already killing was an accident.
Was it? Was it a PTSD freakout? I missed that.
It was
scene.
Then go rewatch it, because it was like a triggering someone with. I'm not experienced in PTSD victims, but it seemed like she triggered something and then he reacted violently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. That makes sense then.
Yeah.
I literally just probably wasn't paying attention when that scene happened. There was no nudity, probably... so it's like, why look if there's no nudity?
Yeah, because the episode ends with Saru telling Lorca. Lorca looks pretty surprised, and then it's actually a pan out of Lorca's backside where he still has a phaser tucked into his pants.
Yeah, and that's why I figured he kind of knew what was going to happen, because the phaser symbolized he really hasn't changed, that he's still the same guy. He was just pretending to not lose his command.
Well, he's still on edge from being a prisoner of war.
Is he, though?
Are you just going to question everything I come up with?
Yes, because we know what happens later.
Okay, anyways, in these last couple episodes, has there been anything worth mentioning?
There was no holodeck simulation technology, so that beginning scene in 6 was just...
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when that scene was happening. It's like, I mean, it didn't really seem like a holodeck, but it seemed like...
Like an early kind of type.
Like an early concept, like bridging VR to the holodeck.
Yeah, kind of.
And I kind of expected to be wearing some sort of VR goggles instead of having this weird setup with a bunch of, looks like light rigging systems to kind of display the simulation.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird.
Might just be an early prototype.
Could be.
Oh, the tech, because they did ramp up the spore drive, so because we never see anything or hear anything in future seasons, I'm assuming they kind of made them obsolete after season 2.
I don't think they made them obsolete. I think my theory behind it is that when the first ship got destroyed and they realized what it takes to navigate the ship properly and that they're not able to do it, they try to suppress the technology to ensure that no other species would try and develop it, you know? So that's why I'm like, oh, because the facilities where they're growing it, they were classified facilities. She said, yes, and our classified installations are working on it and are working to grow more spores for you. So they're all classified. Everything's classified. So, I mean, it makes sense that if it failed and that they would just simply suppress the matter and ensure it just never falls in the wrong hands.
Well, but you know something's there. You know this is possible to travel 90 light years in a split second. So you would think they would actively pursue it and, you know, maybe find other studies or other creatures or more tardigrades or something to where they can replace the warp drive and now travel great distances in an extremely short amount of time.
Maybe.
Versus using warp.
I was going to say this would be a fun direction. Or they could use it as a transition to explain the Omega particle. You won't know this one, but other Star Trek fans might know this one. So supposedly, this actually comes from Star Trek Voyager. So there is a particle kind of like, I don't want to say like the God particle, but it's almost like that, to where it's an extremely powerful particle that can be used to, they say it's like an explanation of how the universe began. It's the Borg love it because it's considered perfection, but it's essentially one of the most powerful particles in existence, but it's also one of the most unstable particles. And it was an experiment they were trying to do around this time, and the resulting explosion of a single gram of the particle that they tried to synthesize destroyed all the subspace around the facility that they were working at. And they ended up banning the technology because the Omega particle essentially destroyed subspace, making warp travel impossible in that sector. So that would be fun if they tried to use the spore technology and to as an alternative means of transportation to transition to the Omega. And as kind of that would be a fun explanation to kind of explain it away and why it was suppressed, because they shut that down completely. Only Starship captains know about it, and a few select admirals. They have very specific protocols. It's they even throw out General Order Number 1, the Prime Directive, becomes obsolete during the Omega Protocol because it is considered that dangerous. Now, that would be a great explanation if they want to explain why it doesn't, if they want to try and make that connection in research and development of new transportation, why it was suppressed. I would love that. That would be a great way to do it.
We'll see. So far we're through the first six episodes of Discovery. What are you thinking? What do you think about it?
It's not Star Trek. Like, I mean, it's a good show. It's not bad. It's 5.5, 6 out of 10. It's getting better every episode. Acting's okay. Writing's not bad. Just too many inconsistencies for my taste. It's not Star Trek. I'm not liking the character development so far. It's average. I mean, it's about average. Yeah, it's humor's kind of dry. It's very serious. You know, it's meh. This is part of the reason why I wasn't very excited to do Discovery. You know, I wanted to do Orville or Battlestar Galactica over Discovery. It's meh. Honestly, yeah. Orville feels more Star Trek than Discovery did, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's been kind of the talk of the sci-fi world, is that Star Trek doesn't feel like Star Trek. It just feels like a
fancy
sci-fi show with the Star Trek name.
Well, that's because Orville was it was done by Seth MacFarlane, and Seth MacFarlane is a huge Trekkie. Like, the dude was in Star Trek. He was in a couple of episodes of Enterprise. I don't know if you ever noticed it, but
yeah, I did.
I mean, dude's a huge Star Trek fan. He loves it, and he even said, like, yeah, I basically wanted to do my own kind of Star Trek with this show.
Yeah.
So that's probably why.
Exactly.
What about you, Steve? We're six episodes through. What are you thinking so far?
I mean, it's all right. I don't want to say good, but it's not quite meh. I mean, like I said, each episode has gotten a little better and made me a little more intrigued to watch the next one. So,
well, as more of a casual Star Trek fan, how do you feel it meshes with the other Star Trek series so far?
Well, I mean, I'm used to the not anthology, but the what is the how do they you know, the one-off, the whole episode is about it has one plot and then you move on. And if you miss an episode, you don't really miss much. They right. might reference it in later episodes, but it's not like
it's more episodic than,
yeah,
than it's an episodic storyline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Story arcs or whatever.
Yeah. This overarching story is a little weird for Star Trek, but it's got some cool aspects to it. Like I said, it's a good sci-fi show just with the Star Trek title, even though it doesn't feel entirely Star Trek-y.
Yeah. Well, I think the creators, when they were trying to do this, they said that, oh, well, part of, you know, growing is, you know, changing the style and changing, you know, change is part of growth. And, you know, the Star Trek has to change if it wants to grow. I'm like, no, it doesn't. I mean, hell, Mandalorian was kind of proof that it really doesn't. You just don't understand the show well enough to do it properly, you know, the people that are doing it. And
well, it's one of those things where I get it. It's kind of like a band who, you know, they start out in one genre and then their music and style changes as the years go on because they need to stay relevant. And this is Star Trek's attempt to stay relevant, but no one really wants that in the TV world. I mean, some bands are able to pull it off, some aren't. But, I mean, Star Trek's, just based on history and how fans have reacted, and, you know, they want to go back to their OG music, not transition to fit the times.
Right. It's kind of like the Star Wars community. I mean, you know, with Mando, you know, Mando made grown-ass men fucking cry.
True.
I don't foresee that ever happening with Star Trek.
It's a little different, but yeah, I see where you're going.
Like, it just comes from, you know, there is no, and I said this last episode, there's no Dave Filoni or Jon Favreau of the Star Trek world. You know, there's a whole other world with Star Wars that, you know, you can get more into. You got the books, you got the fandom, you got Legends, you got comics. You don't have as much with Star Trek. So, I mean, you basically True. Have the shows. Now, granted, the Trekkies love, they're diehard. So, it's, you really need somebody who understands the fan base and the community for it to really succeed. And I don't think CBS has any interest in doing that. I think they just want to make money. So it's just not going to succeed.
Okay. Gotcha.
Should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley!
Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
What do we got to look forward to for next week, brother?
So next week is part 3 of our season 1 discussion covering episodes 7, 8, and 9, which I think 9 was the mid-season finale. Pretty sure that's how I planned it. So episode 7 will be Magic to Make the Sane Man Go Mad, which is another Harry Mudd episode. I knew he appeared again in this season. And then episode 8 is, I don't know, this must be Latin because it's Si Vis Pacem Parabellum. And then episode 9 is Into the Forest I Go.
Parabellum. Isn't that the name of John Wick 3?
Yeah, but this Parabellum is two words instead of one.
Oh.
That's why I was like, I think it's Latin, so.
Yeah, probably.
So that's what we have to look forward to next time.
Oh, I just remembered the name of the guy who founded Logic for Vulcans. It was Sorok. He is the founder of the modern, you know, Vulcan philosophy around logic. So there you
gotcha.
Go. All right, well, that's pretty much all I got. I guess I'll do it for this week's episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion on Star Trek Discovery.
Yep. Don't forget to keep the conversation going over on social media with hashtag Deep Space High and hashtag Tacos and Drek. And be sure to follow our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and our Insta at Deep Space High Podcast. There you can stay up to date with our latest announcements.
Yes, and please, please, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us. It helps with the algorithms to get the show out more.
Yeah, we want to grow, and we need your help to grow.
Yeah, and then be sure to leave a review as well. You can leave it at Apple Podcast or on Spreaker. This helps us, you know, put out better quality.
But we only want 5 stars.
Yeah.
If you got something bad to say, send it to our email.
Yeah. What is our email?
I'm not telling, so you don't have to say the bad stuff. just kidding. It's deepspacehighpod@gmail.com.
Yes. All right, well, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. Live long and prosper. That's usually your thing.